Velkommen til Jernverket podcast episode 4. Jeg heter Helle Stenkløv, og I 2009 møtte jeg Manila Road når de spilte I Norge for første gang. Den neste halvtimen får du et gjenhør med Mark Shelton og kompani.
Okay, we may just have to start then. Sitting here with Manila Road, it's Raise the Dead Fest in late October 2009. Maybe we could start by you all presenting yourself.
Okay, I'm Mark the Shark Shelton. I play guitar and sing a little bit.
I'm Brian Hellrody Patrick, lead singer.
Vince Goldman, bass.
Corey Christner, and drums.
And that was the whole band. You were... Yeah. Manila Road has been in the game since 1977, when you were high school kids.
Well, I was already out of high school by then.
So. But there aren't many left from the 1977 lineup.
No, as a matter of fact, I'm the only one that's still an original member. But Brian, he actually started working with the band as one of our road managers in 1981 or 82. So he's actually been with the band for an awful long time, too. He didn't start singing with us until 2001, though. So, yeah.
Yeah, because you were playing from 77 to about 1990, and then you had this break for about 11 years.
I think it looked like 11 years to everyone else because we didn't put any albums out, but actually Harvey Patrick, Brian's brother, and Randy Fox and I got back together and did about a year. A couple of years we played around Kansas locally and did some a lot of gigs as Manila Road again. But then that sort of broke up again for a while. And then it wasn't until 2000 that we reorganized the band again.
But you came with your first album already in 1980, Invasion, and then you came with Metal in 1982.
Yeah.
But the sound that we know as Manila Road, the true epic heavy metal sound, that came in 83, is that correct?
Yeah, 83 with Crystal Logic. Crystal Logic. I think that's when we really started to develop more of the true sense of what we were about at that point, or at least the true sense of the sound for the band. And especially the epic stuff actually started even back as far as Invasion, because one of the songs on that was The Empire, which was like a 14-minute epic. But the real heavy metal aspect of the epic metal side of it didn't really start being pronounced with the band until 83 with Crystal Logic. Yeah.
But how did you get there? How did you develop this particular sound?
I stumbled into it. No, actually, we started out being more of a space rock band at first, and it was just as time went on, my influences were really heavy bands, bands like Black Sabbath and UFO and stuff like that. And I eventually, it was like a quest for being faster and heavier. And the quest finally led us to that Crystal Logic type sound. And I think another thing that changed during those time frames is that I was going to college from like around 1980 to 83, and I was studying anthropology. And that type of research led to how I started writing my lyrics, you might say. So that's when all the lyric content sort of turned to more of a historical, legendary, mythological type of sense to the lyrics. So, and I think that made a big difference in what directed us towards the epic style.
Yeah, because you often have a concept with your albums, or a lyrical concept.
Quite often, yes. And that's something that we've sort of strived for over the years. And the concepts range from either things that I've invented in my own head, or literature that I'm really into, or history, mythology, legends, folklore, things like that, from all over the world, actually, but mostly European stuff.
Yeah, your last album, Voyager. Yeah, you have a Viking team there.
Yeah.
That's pretty Nordic.
Well, some of my family heritage comes back to Norway. One of my grandmothers was Norse, my other grandmother was Swedish. So it's sort of a ancestral thing, and I'm just really into the Norse mythology, and I don't know, I guess it's in my blood.
But you, throughout the years, Manila Road has come out with quite a lot of albums. But what?
16 studio albums, I think.
16, yeah. What is your personal favorite here? I really like Crystal Logic, and I think many people do.
Well, I think that seems to be the general consensus that it's our one of our most classic albums. Personally, I don't know if I'd have to just pick one as a favorite. Boy, it's really hard to pick just one, but I think I'd say Gates of Fire.
Why?
Well, I don't know. And it's really hard to choose because I like Voyager a lot, too. I think most artists usually, they think that their newest work is their best, you know. So, and I'm no different. I always think that, too. But Gates of Fire, I think we had a really good production going on that one. That was the first album we did with Corey, and his drumming is just ultra fantastic. And the historical and legendary topics that we were using during that, and the literary topics we used in that album, were all ones that are that I'm really deeply enthused about. And there's not a song on that album that I don't like. And I think it took me like 2 years to research the Roman stuff that we did on there, you know, the Fall of Ilium stuff. You know, I'm a huge Robert E. Howard fan, so the Frost Giant's Daughter stuff was just, you know, like a dream come true to be able to do that type of stuff. And then the Battle of Thermopylae, you know, it's like the most classic story of you know, giving one's self for truth and justice and honor. And I don't know, I just, the whole album, I love every guitar solo on it. I love all the drumming on it. The musicianship I thought was excellent. I thought it was just overall one of the best albums we'd ever done. But I'd have to throw out there too, I really like Voyager, I like Atlantis Rising a lot. I really like the Deluge and Mystification. And Crystal Logic's one of my favorites too. So it's really hard to just pick one, you know. And when people ask me to just name one song that I like, that's like virtually impossible.
Yeah, I was thinking about more about albums, because that's often easier to.
Yeah, well, when you try and pick one favorite out of 160 some odd songs, you know, like it's really hard for us to even just figure out what songs we're going to do in the show, because we're always getting emails from our fans saying they want us to play this, that, the other thing. You know, they always want us to play enough songs that it'd take us 5 hours to do all the songs that they want to hear. So it's really hard for us to pick and choose which ones we should do.
Nowadays, you're a singer and a guitarist, but I heard you ripped one of your voice chords.
Yeah, one of my vocal cords. I started having problems with that back in 1984 when we were recording Open the Gates. I was really sick when we went in and recorded the album. And there was one day, we couldn't change the booking though, because the studio was booked up solid for months to come. And so we had to go in and do it when we had the time booked. And when I sang everything in about, I don't know, 8 hours, it was like one whole day that I spent just singing. And I actually injured my vocal cords when I did that. And I have what they call chronic laryngitis. So if I use my voice enough, eventually my voice just disappears for a while. And, you know, I've been lucky in the sense that I've been able to still sing and still keep my voice. But I probably wouldn't be able to do all the touring that we're doing without Brian there to do most of the singing. And we're just really lucky that he sounds an awful lot like me. So.
Yeah, how did you find the new Manila Road? How do you find the members for the lineup?
eBay. No. Okay, I'm kidding, of course.
It wouldn't surprise me.
No, yeah, I know. No, I've just been real, the city we come from, Wichita, has just an overabundance of really great musicians. And so it's really never really been that difficult to find really good musicians to play with. There's a lot of unsung heroes from our community. And I've been lucky to have such a great bunch of guys to choose from. But, yeah, you know, right now I've got the best bunch of guys I've ever played with. So, you know, we get along really well. We have fun touring together. And we very rarely argue with each other. And,
lies.
Okay, yeah, that's like, actually, Corey and Brian fight all the time, but it's play fighting. No, we just have a lot of fun with each other, and it's a good community to bring musicians from. There's a lot of great music going on back home, and I'm just honored to have these guys with me.
Then I can ask the other guys. How do you feel about this? Were you Manila Road fans before you got into the band, or?
Yeah, I was. I was in the studio the first time. Mark was wrapping up some album work and stuff. That's when I learned about them. And then I ended up opening up for Manila Road and three different other bands. You know, I've known Mark for many years and stuff. And just ended up really digging, wanted to play, you know, real metal with a real original band and stuff. So it was a great opportunity, and just walked right in there. And these guys let me in the door real easy.
You're the youngest of all, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did you end up with these guys?
Well, Mark, or my dad, and I knew Mark since the late 80s, I think.
Change his diapers.
83.
They've been pals since, or 83, he says. And I was, what, 16 or 17 when my dad asked Mark to do a favor to record my band's demo, a different band I was in. And we did that. It was going to be a three-song thing, and then ended up recording everything we got. And once it was finished, Mark asked if I wanted to come with him to Europe. And I told him no several times. And
I kept after him, though. I kept after him because he came into the studio with his band Hardset and did this demo that I recorded for him. And I was just totally, utterly fascinated with his drumming capabilities. And so I went to his father, who is a long time friend of mine, and he's also a guitar player. And I told him, I got to have your son play with me. I need somebody great to go overseas and play. And so I said, you've got to help me convince him to go. And he did say no to me several times. But I just kept on at him. And finally, we got him to come try it. And it worked out great. So
I said no for the reason that, you know, my dad told me about the fan base and how brutal the fans are over here, and then listening to some of Randy's work, I'm just like, oh my God. And, you know, I think we only had maybe 3 or 4 months for me to learn this 24 songs that they had picked, you know, and our first show was going to be the Keep It True
2004. It was the Keep It True 2 that we played his first show. It was awesome, though. He did a great job. I wouldn't want anybody else with me right now.
You are a band that has, you're sort of a combination of being a bit underground, but still you are big among metal fans. And I don't know quite how to describe it, but you've been honored where 18 bands from all over the world made a tribute.
Yeah.
How do you feel about tribute songs, tribute bands, bands making tributes?
Man, I think it's maybe one of the highest honors you can receive, you know, but, you know, first of all, I thought you had to be dead to have that happen, so I'm glad I'm not dead. I guess most people don't get to see their own tribute albums come out, but
Rush,
Working Man's Rush, I guess, was one of those. But I tell you what, it's just it's so incredible to think that that my music and this band has influenced so many other bands around the world. And it was when it all took place, I was just floored. It was just such an honor, and I'm still just totally tripped out about it. I mean, it's like, I can't believe that we've been that influential to so many other musicians. So, you know, it's hard to explain how it makes you feel, because it's like one of the most awesome feelings in the world to have that kind of exaltation from other bands that I think are extremely good myself.
But did you know that the Norwegian black metal band The Dark Throne mentioned Manila Road in their song Raised on Rock?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think one of the guys is going to be at the show tonight.
Probably.
And so I'm hoping to meet him and thank him for the kudos. Yeah, I thought that was pretty well, too. That's probably one of the other times that I felt like I'd been, you know, honored beyond what I should have been. Great stuff.
Is this your second time in Norway? Or
No, actually, this is the first time the band's been in Norway, yeah. And we go to Finland after this, and it'll be the first time we've been there as well. It's incredible that, you know, over the last, year or two, we've played an awful lot of places that we've never been before, and we've been really received well everywhere we go, and the people are just fantastic. And Norway's been no different. Everybody's just been really nice, and you know, I can't wait to play tonight, and I can't wait to come back and do it again.
Because this is an old school metal festival, Raise the Dead, with a lot of old school bands. And people
I think we fit in that.
Yeah. But people are talking about the new wave of traditional heavy metal instead of the new wave of British heavy metal, which was 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, I was alive then too.
Yeah, you know both sides. But what do you think is the reason that people search back to the old metal or the true metal?
Titles of what they give us, you know, unbelievable.
It's strange because, you know, it's always hard for us to put a moniker on ourselves. The term epic metal for us came out of everybody asking us, well, what do you play? And we didn't know what to tell them because we couldn't even tell ourselves what style it was. And so we just started saying, well, it's epic, you know. And of course, we were a heavy metal band, so turned into epic metal. I don't know. I think the reason people are looking back towards the old style so much, though, is because it was extremely artistic. It's sort of like with me. I was really highly influenced by bands from the 60s, you know, and the 70s. And then the bands of the 80s were really influenced by bands of the 70s. And it just keeps on going. But I think it was John Luca of Battle Ram that put it really well to me just the other day. He was saying how did you put it, man? I mean,
it's just that the metal of the 90s and of the nowadays, you don't go back to the old school, you don't sound metal. Because you have to go to the roots.
Now I remember exactly what he said. See, like, I was influenced by guitar players like Jimi Hendrix and Michael Schenker. And, of course, that wasn't really heavy metal, per se, back in those days, you know. Tony Iommi even still doesn't say he's heavy metal, you know, from Black Sabbath. He just says it's heavy rock. But those were the guitar players that I was really influenced by, or at least some of them. And so we sort of took that style and brought it into our own essence. But yet bands today, I think, their influences are the bands that were already heavy and not maybe so classical oriented or whatever. It's really hard to say because there's still a lot of different know, a lot of different bands and styles and musicians out there that are doing doing their own thing. And but I don't know, I think you've got an awful lot of bands that just sound the same nowadays, the newer ones. And that was one thing about the old days, was everybody had sort of a distinct sound of their own. And I think that's probably what the main difference is.
Fucking drums, plug and play guitar, just raw fucking aggression. And loud screaming fucking solos, man. Solos disappeared. Like back in the 90s, so grunge came along and everything sort of went way underground. So now I'm seeing a resurgence from a lot of metal bands. Yeah, so people were sick of
Scene is coming back.
Yeah, he's probably right about that, about the guitar solos. You know, the guitar solo thing did sort of disappear for a while. And I think that's one thing that the older, truer metal thing is all about still, is the guitar solo. And you just weren't getting that guitar solo thing going on until you go back and look a little farther back, to when everybody was going nuts on the guitar and trying to be the fastest, weirdest guitar player, you know. So I think it's a combination of a lot of things, but more than anything, I think it's the search for that lost chord, the search for the sound that's, you know, that's the divine sound, you might say. And I think we're all still looking for it, so.
But when it comes to guitar playing, after over 30 years of playing the guitar, are you still as eager to rehearse and learn new things? I heard you also play the piano and drums.
Yeah, I do. And I play bass, and I love playing acoustic guitar. And
skin flute.
Yeah, I play skin flute. yeah. Oh my. No, I still love rehearsing. As a matter of fact, I look forward to it every time we're getting ready to get together to practice, to go on tour, to work on stuff for the studio. I'm still just totally enthralled by it. As a matter of fact, when I wasn't playing for a while, when there was a time period between like 1994 and I'd say like 1998 or 99, but I really didn't do a lot of musical work. I got married, I had kids, I played a lot of golf, and I had a regular day job and everything. It about drove me crazy. It was getting to the point where I was just really unhappy with life in general. And it was Brian one day at the golf course. He says, "Man, I just hate to see you like this. We need to put a band back together. We need to work on a project or something to get you out of this dump and just get you back to being Shark again." And thanks to you, brother, this is where we are now because of that conversation. So thanks to golf and Brian.
But Mark the Shark Shelton, you want to tell me how you got this name?
Yeah, sure. I was working in the studio with a band called Stygian Shore, recording their first EP, and at the time I didn't really have a nickname, and those guys had a habit of taking the first syllable of your first name and the first syllable of your last name and interchanging them, and so Mark Shelton became Shark Melton, and it just stuck. They started calling me Shark all the time. Next thing I knew, all my friends were calling me Shark, and it just crossed over to where now I'm Shark. I think it actually says that on my birth certificate now.
Could you tell me about the dreams of Eschaton? Because you were supposed to record this early in the 80s, but it didn't come out until 2002, and then under another name.
Yeah, under the name Mark of the Beast. Well, we had a song called Dreams of Eschaton that we wrote after that, that was on our Crystal Logic album, so we didn't want to, you know, use the same title at that point. The reason we shelved the album was because I just didn't think it was that good at the time. I thought we were moving really fast at that point, and we were heading faster and faster towards more of that Crystal Logic sound. And that album just, it didn't have what I thought was where we were wanting to go. I mean, it was close, but it wasn't the whole cigar like I thought it should be. And so we put it on a shelf and we ended up doing metal. And a couple of the songs on metal were a little closer to what I was looking for. But, it really wasn't until we did Crystal Logic that it really all started to come to fruition and that we started realizing, how we needed to approach the music to be what we wanted to be at that point. So that's how that happened. Oh, and then, when it got re-released, I was hounded by the guys that owned Monster Records for about 10 years. And they'd call me up every 6 months or so and try and talk me into releasing it. And I'd tell them, no, it sucks, I don't want it out there. And then they'd call me up another 3 or 4 months later and we'd do the same thing. And finally, 10 years later, there was one day, he just caught me in the right mood. He called me up, Dennis Bergeron did. And he called me up and he said, look, I know you're going to tell me no, but I've got to call and ask again. I said, okay, whatever. You've called me for 10 years. Fine. You're persistent. I like that. You can have it. Let's do it. And so that's how it finally ended up coming out. And now I'm actually really glad it's out there because in my old age, I've decided that it's okay to have old stuff out there that maybe doesn't sound quite as professional as it should. Because it still has the spirit in the music, and that's what's really important. It's not necessarily whether it's produced perfectly or the musicianship is mistake-free. It's more important that the feeling is in the music, and it's definitely in the music for that album, so I'm glad it's out there now.
I reckon you are writing new music and want to give out more albums.
Oh, yeah, as a matter of fact, we've just finished writing all the songs for our next album, and we're working on recording it in the studio right now. As a matter of fact, as soon as we get back from this little mini tour, we're going back to the studio and starting to work on finishing it up. And like I said, all the music's written at this point, but not all the tracks are laid down yet. So we're about maybe halfway done with it or something like that, and hope to have the new project out by next summer.
How does the rest of the band contribute to the writing? I know you are writing much of the lyrics and probably riffs. What do the others do?
I pretty much just let them go. I show them what I've got, and then it's up to them. So yeah,
collaborate. Well, he's generous as far as letting us come up with parts and ideas. Not straying too far from this or that. But if there's something that sounds, that sounds great, we'll go with it.
I heard you're going to play a 2-hour set tonight. What can we expect from this?
I'd have to kill you if we told you.
Hey, this will be aired in 1 week, so you can tell me.
I can tell you. We don't have to kill her then. Okay.
We'll probably play a few off Crystal Logic tonight, and probably a couple off the new one, one off of Gates of Fire, several off of Open the Gates and The Deluge and
Mystification
we'll play a few of, so there'll be some crowd pleasers in there. What's your favorite? What do you want to hear tonight?
Crystal Logic.
You got it.
The song?
The song and generally the album.
Okay. Oh, just the whole album.
I think we're playing 4 off of that album tonight.
Maybe 5, I don't know.
Beautiful. I think that's the Manila Roll album I've listened the most to, but that's probably also because it was the first one I was introduced to. And I must admit that the first time I heard it, I didn't like your voice. It grew on me.
I don't like it.
Yeah, no. I still don't like my voice either. So.
It's a love and hate thing.
I think my voice has always been one that had to grow on people. And as a matter of fact, our music's sort of like that too, I think, at times. Because it's different, it's not typical of the genre at all. So it's one of those things where you either love it or you hate it. And I guess we've been lucky that a bunch of people have decided they love it. So
I think we're approaching the end soon, half an hour. The time's flying. At last, I will just ask you, have you any... Do you know of any of the bands, other bands that are playing at this festival?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. We're
this will be the second time we've played with Angel Witch.
Angel Witch, yeah. I'm a big Kevin Hayborn fan, of course. And the other bands, familiar with them, but not really friends. Haven't played with many of them before. We've known about Sodom for a long time, so you know, another great band, and we're really proud to share the stage with all of them, because some great musicians. And just today we've met the guys in Tyrant, who are right over here, you know, and really nice guys. And Kevin Hayborn and his Angel Witch boys, yeah, we played with them in Germany just a while back and had a blast with them. It's remarkable, because I've been an Angel Witch fan ever since the first album came out, and you know, it's remarkable that, you know, I get to play with them at this point, because I was, you know, it's like a dream come true just to get to see them play live, let alone share a stage with them.
Okay, thank you. I hate the question, is there anything more you'd like to add, but I always like to ask the bands or the artists if there's anything I've forgot or anything I should have asked.
Nothing that you forgot, but something that I always like to say.
Yeah.
And that's, I like to thank all of our supporters and our friends and fans all over the world, because they're the ones that make this possible. If it wasn't for our supporters and our fan base, we couldn't do this, because that's what gives us the drive to continue on. All the friendship and honor that they bestow upon us is just incredible. And, you know, most of the time we feel like we're unworthy of that. And I have to put the thanks where the thanks are due. And that's with the people that have kept us being able to do what we dream as being a lifelong ambition. And if it wasn't for our fans, we couldn't do this. So a lot of love out to our fans, and up the hammers, down the nails. Hail Thor.
Then you have to make me, what's it called? Oh. Big favor,
yeah.
Or a small favor.
Yeah.
Could you make a jingle for my radio program?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who you are, what band you're playing in, and of course the name of my show.
Okay.
Hammertid, or Hammer Time if you'd like.
Hammer Time? Okay. Mm. Hammer Time. MC Hammer Time?
it's a spin-off of it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Hammertid is kind of Hammer Time in Norwegian.
So how do you say it again?
Hammertid. Hammertid.
Hammertid.
Hammertid. Hammertid.
Hammertid.
Hammertid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So this is Mark the Shark Shelton of Manila Road saying you're listening to Hammertid.
Nice.
Up the hammers.
Up the hammers. Yeah, we ought to do one that's all of us.
Yeah, say up the hammers in like in a choir. 1, 2, 3.
Up the hammers.
That was terrible.
Once more.
I can't count it right.
1, 2, 3.
Up the hammers.
Oh, let's try this again. This is Manila Road saying, listen to your best metal show in Norway, Hammertid.
Up the hammers. Hammers.
Fucking awesome.
Du har hørt et intervju med Manila Road gjort for Hammertid høsten 2009, når Manila Road spilte I Norge for første gang på Raise the Dead Fest. Hvil I fred, Mark Shelton, og takk for alt du har for musikken og tilhengeren din. Up the hammers and down the nails. I Jernverket podcast episode 5 møter vi Necromanteon anno 2013.
Lite postervennlig plate og, som har slått igjennom hardt.
Det blitt I posterplate, rett og slett.
Her, det det som litt ekkelt. Den
hva skal det bety? Den legger
jeg. Jeg prøver bare å sette.
Episoden legger allerede ut, så du kan laste ned til podcastleverandøren din eller på jernverket.com. Mitt navn Helle Stenkløv, og Jernverket podcast gir deg et nytt eller gammelt hardrock-intervju hver fredag. Følg Jernverket på Facebook, Instagram og jernverket.com. Gi full pott og hør på Heavy. Vi snakkes.